I don't know if you've ever thought to yourself, the preacher should have his head examined. But in case you have, I have. So we are part of a tradition, both denominations fall in this category, where the idea is that we don't pick people who would make good pastors. We wait to see who God picks, and then we try to make them good pastors. So you may have zero talents to begin with, but the theory is that if God sees some potential in you, then who are we to stand in the way of that? So we have processes for preparing people for ministry. And one of the things that the Presbyterian denomination, where I was under care, does is they require a psychological examination. And I know the Methodists do this as well. I'm not as familiar with that process, though. So I had to have a psychological examination. And one of the things, there wasn't much that I learned, but I did learn one thing. I learned that I'm introverted. And that was really not much of a surprise. What surprised me was the degree to which I am introverted. And the way to explain it, they used psychological sigmas and Z-scores and stuff like that. But basically what they said is if there's 1,000 people and you know, the person at this end is the most introverted person in that group, and the person at that end, the 1,000th person is the least introverted person in the group, that I'm over at this end. I'm one of I'm either number one or two, or possibly I might stretch my way all the way up to number three. But there's 997 people who are more introverted than me. So I'm a pretty introverted person. And so that was part of that, that informed my care. One of the things that I had to do every week with my field ed supervisor. Another thing we do as part of preparation for ministry is you work in an actual church under an actual pastor, and they, you know, help you get better at all the things you do. And one of the things that my field ed supervisor did is she said, okay, each week I want you to meet somebody new. In fact, I want you to meet three people new, and I'm going to quiz you on them when we meet on our regular kind of follow-up meetings to find out that you've been doing it and to find out how good a job you've done. You know, you can't just hang out with the same person every week at coffee time. So I had to do this for my whole year, and then they also made me work in a prison and all kinds of stuff. The idea was to stretch me, to teach me that it is possible. So because the point is that being an introvert doesn't mean that you're shy. It just means that it wears you out dealing with people. So that hasn't changed. So I'm one of the most introverted people you will ever meet. But I love talking to people. The problem is it just tires me out. So every week after I talk to my field ed supervisor about the people I'd been talking to that day or in the week or whatever, then I would go home and I would crash for about an hour because I just needed to recharge my batteries. Now, some of you are extroverts and you have no idea what I'm talking about. For you, meeting a stranger actually, like, it gets you all excited and, you know, your juices start flowing, and I assume, I have no idea, right? But apparently there are this group of people that actually it kind of brings them to life, that they kind of switch into a new gear and they really love meeting new people and so forth. But I know one thing about you, and it's what I mentioned to the children. However much you enjoy it, however much it wears you out meeting new people, I know that there is a group of people that is easier to meet, and there is a group of people that's harder to meet, because we are groupish people. That there are groups that we define for ourselves, and crossing those boundaries is hard. For an extrovert, it's still easier than for an introvert, but it's still hard to cross into a different group. And what I mean by groups, there's a psychologist named Jonathan Haidt. He wrote a book called The Righteous Mind. He's one of the pioneers of something called moral foundations theory. And the idea is that humans are very groupish animals. That if you compare us, the only animals that can even compare to us are like honeybees and termites. That nothing else cooperates as well as humans do. And certainly no other mammals do. That there's a kind of something called a pygmy shrew or something. They're really the only other social animal to the same degree. So there's lots of animals that like can use tools or that work in packs and things like that, but they don't cooperate the way people do. And so, for example, in this book, he quotes some chimpanzee researcher who says, you see chimps using tools and doing all kinds of fun stuff, but you will never, it's inconceivable that you will ever see two chimps moving a log. that they will like, you know, one of them says, hey, can you pick up that other end, right? It's just a concept that's beyond chimpanzees. So, but it's something that's so basic, we have no trouble imagining it. And so that is the secret to our success as a species. It's why we live in cities, you know, great tall cities. It's why we go to the moon, right? It's because we are able to cooperate. And if you've ever been, you know, in a work environment where they said, we're going to have a team building exercise, you know the way that this works. It's like, how can we focus more on what we're trying to do together, right? We're going to kind of all look inward and see the thing we're trying to do, pick, you know, carry the log like chimps can't, whatever that is. We're going to do that together, and we're going to have success, and we're all going to get stock options or whatever it is, right? Right? That's the way humans behave. But what that means is that the tighter we form the group to cooperate together, it means the more we have a boundary around us, right? And there's all kinds of boundaries. You know, there's unimportant boundaries, and there's very important boundaries. And one of the things that's amazing about Jesus is that he crosses those boundaries a lot easier than most of us do. I would say pretty much anybody. And I don't know if Jesus was an introvert or an extrovert, right? I really don't know. Everybody wants to be on Team Jesus or vice versa. Introverts want Jesus to be on Team Introvert. So there is one verse that I'm aware of that might point to that. So when Jesus heard that John the Baptist had been killed, he withdrew in a boat to a deserted place by himself. So I say Jesus is an introvert. So I'll just ignore the entire rest of the New Testament. But so I want him on my team. So Jesus may or may not have been an introvert. I don't know. But what he was for sure was somebody who was very good at crossing those boundaries, that the boundaries that defined his own age. And I think there's a lot he can teach us about the boundaries that define our own age, how we can cross those boundaries. And so we're going to look at this. And the reason is because those boundaries make a big difference in our world. You know, if you think about political boundaries, you know, right and left, if you think about some of the other boundaries, racial and ethnic boundaries we have, if you think about class divisions, you know, the elite versus the working class or things like that, if you think about generational, you know, I'm looking around, how many people have ever had somebody roll their eyes and say, okay, boomer, right? you know, there are generational boundaries. There's all kinds of boundaries in our world. And so it behooves us as Jesus' disciples to look at him and learn from him and see what we can find out about how we can cross those kind of boundaries. So if there were any younger people here, you know, it's back to school season. And as I told them, they get worse at this, right? They start acting more and more like us. So first grade's a lot easier to make friends than 12th grade, as we all remember very painfully, right? So we're going to learn from Jesus. We're picking things up right where we left off last time. Last time, if you weren't here, Jesus talked about contamination, that basically a first century equivalent of cooties. And what he said is that those things don't give you cooties, and neither do people. Right, so that's what we're going to see today. Is we're going to see an illustration. So Jesus taught about it, and now he's going to illustrate it. So we're going to see that in two different stories here that happen. So it says, so we pick things up. Verse 24 says, Jesus left that place and went to the region of Tyre. So where's Tyre? So Tyre is on the Mediterranean coast, north of the Holy Land. So if we think of the Mediterranean coast kind of turning a corner and going to Africa, right? So you know, the Mediterranean coast is like a big rectangle, and Turkey's up here, and then the Holy Land is over here, and then Africa's right here. So the Holy Land is kind of down at the bottom end of that, right before you turn the corner, right? Lebanon today is further north, and Tyre is in modern-day Lebanon. So Jesus went north of what we think of today as the Holy Land, the region of Galilee in that era, and he went to Tyre. So what did he do there? Well, he hid out, apparently. So it says, he didn't want anyone to know that he had entered a house, but he couldn't hide. So we don't know whose house this is. We don't know why he was there, what he was doing there. All we know is that even being in a house, people found out he was there. That guy from the south who's been doing all those cool miracles, he's in our community. Let's go check him out. So that's what's going on. And in fact, it says, a woman whose young daughter was possessed by an unclean spirit heard about him right away, and she came and fell at his feet. So We don't know her name. We don't know much about her. It says that she's a woman, so we know that. And we know that her young daughter is possessed by an unclean spirit. So there's two reasons that Jesus should avoid her. If anybody's going to give him cooties, it's this woman whose daughter has an unclean spirit. But that's not, Jesus doesn't have any problem with that. In fact, we learn that she is, it says Greek, Syrophoenician by birth. So the Phoenicians lived in two places. They lived in the area around Tyre, but a bunch of them moved over a couple of centuries earlier to Carthage, so way over the far end of Africa. And so there were Libyo-Phoenicians and Syrophoenicians. These are the ones that stayed in Syria. So she is Syrophoenician, and that means she's not really Greek, but it means she probably speaks Greek. So she is not a Jew. She's not part of the Jewish diaspora. We know Jews lived in all over the Mediterranean Sea, but she's not one of them. And they were thin on the ground in that part of the world. So Jesus has left an area where there's lots of Jews, and now maybe there's a couple of Jews in a village or something like that. Maybe not even that many. So she is Greek. She speaks Greek, and she begs Jesus to throw the demon out of her daughter. So she's not really an outsider. If she was in Galilee, she'd be an outsider. What she is she's an insider, and Jesus is the outsider. So Jesus is in this unfamiliar territory. He's the outsider. He doesn't have, maybe he's got his disciples with him, although we don't hear about that. Jesus is in unfamiliar territory talking to unfamiliar people. And one of them comes up and asks him for a miracle. And Jesus says the children have to be fed first. It's not right to take the children's bread and toss it to the dogs. So what does he mean by that? Well, the children, there's some debate about children. Most people seem to think that Jesus is talking about Jews here, that as a Jew, Jesus is saying we're the chosen people of God, that they are the children, and so they have to be fed first. Some people think maybe Jesus has got his disciples with him, and he wants to get away for some kind of retreat or something, and he's saying, I need to feed the disciples. I don't know if that's the case. But Jesus is saying, you go to the back of the line, the children have to be fed first. And he says, it's not right to toss the children's bread to the dogs. So what does he mean by dogs? Well, he probably means Syrophoenicians, but he may mean Greek speakers, or he may mean women, or he may mean people whose daughters have a demon. But he's talking to her, and he's not using a complimentary term. For us, dogs are cute and cuddly, right? We love to scratch their tummy, right? That was not the case in the first century. You know, if you think of the range of words we have for dogs, right? I might say a cute little pooch, and you might say a miserable cur, right? In the first century, you're probably thinking miserable cur is a much more common way of thinking about a dog. So Jesus says even the miserable curs, don't feed the miserable curs. And she says, Lord, even the miserable curs under the table eat the children's crumbs. She says, okay, dog, fine, right? But she gives him this answer. And so we have to ask ourselves, wait a minute, hold on, is Jesus really calling other people dogs? And yes, he is. You know, there's no way to sugarcoat that. There's some debate. What does he mean by that? There's some people who want to cut Jesus some slack, that they say, well, you know, Jesus is winking. Jesus is saying, you know, we're sophisticated people here, you and me, woman. And so we're kind of winking at the parochialism of our cultures, that you and I are, you know, sophisticated, urbane people, and we can laugh at these prejudices that define our cultures. And maybe that's the case, but Mark left that out, right, if that's true. So maybe Jesus did wink at her, but it doesn't say so. Maybe Jesus is testing her. Some people think that this is a test of her faith, and I don't think that really reflects very nicely on Jesus either. I mean, her daughter's got a demon, and she's come to Jesus. She falls on her feet. She falls at his feet before him and begs. How much more of a test of faith is Jesus? You know, do you kick a dog when it's down, right? Speaking of dogs, right? I think that that's not really a compliment either, to say this is testing her faith. Maybe Jesus shared his culture's prejudices. I don't know what it's like to be fully man and fully God, but see what Jesus does, right? She says, Lord, even the dogs under the table eat the children's crumbs. And Jesus says, good answer. Jesus says, That's a great answer. And just FYI, you can look through all of the New Testament and you will find not one other argument where somebody gets the best of Jesus. There's not, you know, we had one last week. The Pharisees and the scribes came to Jesus and they said, "Why are you doing it wrong?" They didn't win the argument. This woman is the one person in all of the New Testament who wins an argument with Jesus. So did she really win it, or was Jesus winking? You know, I don't know. I do know there is a place where there is one other place in the Bible where, well, there's two places in the Bible where Jesus is amazed. In Nazareth, he's amazed at people's lack of faith. And in Matthew's Bible, Matthew's biography of Jesus, it says that somebody amazed him with their faith. When Jesus heard this centurion, he was amazed and said to those who followed him, "Not even in Israel have I found such faith." So there is one place where Jesus is amazed. I think a lot of us, we have this idea that Jesus kind of knows all, sees all, and tells all. But, you know, right there in the New Testament, it says he was surprised. He marveled. Who would have thought? And so maybe that's what's going on here in the story, that Jesus is saying, "I never would have guessed one of you Syrophoenicians would have such a great answer." I don't know. Mark doesn't give us enough information to know. But you see what Jesus is doing. If he thinks those people are dogs, why is he going up to Tyre in the first place? Right? Why is he taking his story to them? Why is he going up there, knowing that people are going to hound him? He's trying to hide from people. He's going up there. He knows that people will want to be healed, and he goes there anyway. So if Jesus hates them because they're dogs, he's got a funny way of showing it. So he goes on. The story immediately after that shows kind of the same idea. It says, after leaving the region of Tyre, Jesus went through Sidon toward the Galilee Sea, through the region of the Ten Cities. So Sidon is further north, so he's gone further up the Mediterranean coast, closer to what is today Beirut. So much further up into the territory of the Lebanon today. And then he kind of cuts inland, goes in toward the Jordan Sea, crosses north of it, and then comes down into this region called the Decapolis, or the Ten Cities. And it's got a Greek name, which tells you the people there are mostly Gentiles also. They're not Jews. They're not speaking Aramaic. They're speaking Greek. They name their region the Ten Cities in Greek. So the person that he meets here is almost certainly a Greek as well. So more outsiders. So some people brought to him a man who was deaf and could hardly speak, and they begged him to place his hand on the man for healing. So whoever this guy is, he can't speak. He's got these people who advocate for him, family members, friends. I don't know what they are. They basically say, "Hey, you're this miracle worker guy. We've heard about you. Can you heal him? Put your hand on him, heal him." And Jesus does that. And what's interesting to me, you know, is that Jesus has just healed the woman's daughter. He doesn't even go to her house. He just says, "Yeah, I've taken care of it. You know, the demon is gone. I didn't have to cast him out. I just gave him a dirty look and off he went," right? You know, the demon's gone, right? I didn't have to do anything. And he's gone. But here they say, "Hey, could you lay your hand on this guy?" And Jesus does. Jesus doesn't say, "I don't need to do that." You know, he says, "Fine." So what does he do? I mean, you know, I don't know what kind of cultural taboos they had. How would any of you feel if I walked up to you and put my fingers in your ears, right? You're probably going to say, "Don't do that," right? And I'm going to probably say, "I don't want to," right? So for us, certainly, it's hard to get into their head. This thing about spitting, I was reading, what on earth is going on there? Apparently in the ancient world, and, you know, don't take this any further than you need to, but they thought spit had like super properties. And so what Jesus probably did, he spat his hand and then did this and put it in the guy's mouth to make him better, right? So I don't know about that, but, you know, Jesus is basically accommodating them. Jesus has been asked to do this, and so he does what they wanted. And I think, you know, this is an example of Jesus saying, "Okay, I will give you exactly what you want," right? And then if we haven't gotten the point there, what happens next? Jesus has sighed. He looks up so that they know that this is God at work. This is not just some traveling magician. So he sighs and he speaks Aramaic, Ephathra. So he's saying, open up in his own language, not Greek, that the people in the Decapolis would have spoken. But he's basically saying, this is the God the Jews worship who's at work here. The one I'm looking up at the sky, I'm healing in his, you know, on his behalf. So if you're wondering, how did you get healed? But beyond that, apart from that, he pretty much does exactly what they wanted. They wanted hands, I give you the hands, right? So the man's ears open, his twisted tongue was released, and he began to speak clearly. So what do I see when I look at this? You know, I grant you, I am puzzled by the dog remark, okay? And I've read all the theories, or I've read a lot of theories, and I don't know which one of them is most compelling, but what I see is Jesus going into regions where he is the outsider, Jesus crossing the boundary, Jesus going into these places at ease, and not saying, look at me, I'm the rock star. I'm that miracle worker you've heard about. Instead, Jesus is actually trying to lie low. He's trying to keep it quiet that he's there. And so I see that Jesus, what these two stories have in common is Jesus is the outsider and Jesus shows his humility. That, you know, I think a lot of us think of humility as something Jesus does, but over and over again we see in the New Testament, humility is what Jesus is. That Jesus is not putting on a show of humility, Jesus is demonstrating his humility. And so he's saying, you guys want me to lay on hands? I'll lay on hands. Okay? You want to have a clever, witty repartee? I'll give you an opportunity to do that. So, Jesus approaches outsiders with humility. And, so Jesus has healed these two people who are outside his own group. He's shown that he can do both kinds of healing. Jesus has shown that he's willing to put his hands on people. He's willing to go right up and do the thing that's crossing boundaries to the greatest degree. And so that still leaves me with dogs. I don't know what to do with dogs. I told you that we can learn from Jesus, right? I wouldn't start there. Right. You know, when you meet new people, start by calling them a dog or a miserable cur. But, you know, maybe you can if you go into it with the idea there's somebody here who's got, you know, who's going to win an argument against me. Right. I think so often we go into our interactions with other people assuming we're right and they're wrong. That if I talk to a Republican, you know, I may be able to set him right, but probably not. Because they're Republicans, right? And maybe I feel that way about Democrats, maybe libertarians, right? Maybe I feel that way about people who are in the trades because I'm a knowledge worker, right? There's lots of ways where I may think, well, you know, I'm kind of slumming whenever I'm talking to this person. They certainly have nothing to offer me. But Jesus demonstrates a willingness to actually be corrected by this person from this other group. And I think that's something we can model. Once we've mastered that, then we can try the dog thing, right? So I would start with the humility and then work on the dog thing. So I'm gonna suggest something that 20 years ago was suggested to me. I'm gonna suggest you try this, right? So I'm gonna suggest over the next week, meet three new people. And some of you, because of the nature of what you do, you meet new people all the time. Meet three different people, three people you wouldn't normally meet, you know, that somehow they're different. They're in a different political group. They're in a different education group. They're in a different generation. Meet some new people, and you'll find out, if nothing else, you'll find out if you're an extrovert or an introvert, because if you're really tired, you'll say, okay, I guess I'm an introvert. So do that. And I will just say, if you're in that group of introverts, I'm going to give you an easy one, right? Meet me, right? Because remember, I'm the last guy, right? I'm there on the end, right? I really like talking to people. If you know me, you know that that's true, right? I love conversations. I love talking to people. I sometimes even listen. But what I do not do is pick up the phone, right? So, you know, let me give you that first of the three people. Call me. Let's set up coffee. Let's have coffee sometime. There's only so much of that I can do in a week because it kills me, right? But I love it. So accommodate my weakness, but maybe also reach out to somebody that you don't know. Try to do what Jesus does. Just approach someone. I've got a book by, there's a pastor in Illinois named Mark Middleton. He's got a book called Just Cross the Room. And I bought the book and I read it, but my overall impression is, at least for me, he might as well say, just fly into space, right? Because that's the hard part, right? But I encourage you, be that person. Cross the room. Be like Jesus. Cross the boundary. Do so with humility and with the possibility that maybe I can find something to learn here. Meet some new people and be open to the possibility they've got something to share with you you don't know, because different perspectives can be insightful. You know, that's the most obvious thing you could possibly say. Of course, different perspectives can be insightful. But do we really believe it? Jesus acts like he does. So be like Jesus. Cross boundaries and listen. Let's pray. Heavenly Father, oh Lord, you know preachers need to listen to their own sermons. And so help me to incorporate this teaching to practice being more like Jesus. But Lord, I pray for this audience as they hear it and as they think, how can they learn from the way Jesus interacts with people who are not part of their group? Lord, help us to be like Jesus, not to be insular, not to be stuck in our groups, but to approach outsiders and to do so with humility. We pray it in Jesus' name and for his sake. Amen.